This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Sometimes characters appear to author Sharon Yule Foster in her dreams. Sometimes they whisper in her ear. When a young slave came to Sharon asking her to write about him, she answered his call. The slave was Nat Turner, leader of a bloody uprising in Southampton County, Virginia, in 1831. Nat Turner is a controversial historical figure. His slave rebellion left at least 61 white men, women, and children dead in the course of those 2 days. He eventually was captured, put on trial, sentenced to death, along with 55 other blacks charged with taking part in Turner's revolt. Nat Turner has been written about extensively, and Sharon Foster began exactly where most scholars and novelists before her did, with the Confessions of Nat Turner, the primary historical document of the 1831 slave rebellion. It's said to be Turner's admission of guilt, as read by his attorney during the trial. Sharon was just about to put the finishing touches on the Nat Turner novel when she was offered a chance to see the actual trial records and transcripts by the court clerk in Southampton County. And suddenly, a lot of things didn't seem right. Sharon found countless conflicting facts, contradictory statements, and that discovery led her on a 5-year-long research project that eventually culminated in the creation of a new historical fiction series called The Resurrection of Nat Turner. The Witnesses is the first book in the series. Sharon Yule Foster is with us today to talk about that and the series. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Oh, thank you. I'm really happy to be here. And your earlier conversation really made me think about Nat Turner and the times that he was living in. People were extremely poor. The farm owners who were owning slaves really for status, many of them were not the farmers we hear of with the large plantations, very small, living in homes that look like slave shacks, really. And, you know, when people are hungry and they're hopeless, desperate things happen.
And that is Southampton County that you described in Virginia, a place with a few and barely able to support themselves. So, of course, the slaves doing far, far worse.
Yes.
That's where Nat Turner finds himself. So tell us about the rebellion. Remind us about this.
In 1831, in the pre-dawn hours of August 22nd, Nat Turner led a slave revolt that, as you said, left more than 50 white people dead. And the primary source document, the Confessions of Nat Turner, which was supposed to have been his confession, says that it was a general rampage against all the whites in the area, and that Thomas Gray, the author, was Nat Turner's attorney, who took his confession, and all of that is not true.
And how did you find that out?
Well, as you said, I was working on the book that I thought would take me about 6 months to finish. And but I had this nagging sense that I needed to find the actual trial records. I already had some discomfort with the confession. I used to work at the Pentagon, and I wrote staff studies. And that was one of my jobs. What a staff study is you write a paper, and it's fished out to all these different directorates, and you get it back with people's comments on it. And as the writer, your job is to make it look seamless, like it's written by one person. And the confessions look like a disjointed, poorly written staff study to me. But I thought, this is the historical document. Who am I to question? But I just kept having this nagging feeling I needed to find the court transcripts. And, you know, another part of my brain is going, that's not rational. You're not going to find slave trial records from 1831. But I put a Google alert on my computer so that every time Nat Turner came up in the news, I would get an alert. And I had had it on for months, was about to turn it off, and then something popped up with a news story. The reporter put me in touch with the county clerk of Southampton County, went to the town, which is now called Cortland, which used to be called Jerusalem, and stood in the courthouse with my hands touching the actual handwritten trial records. And my children tell me that really makes me a research geek, because I was so excited about finding them. And as I stood there reading in the courthouse, I saw that Thomas Gray was not Nat Turner's attorney. Then I read that Nat Turner didn't confess. Instead, he pled innocent. And that began this whole journey of trying to find the real Nat Turner and of what really happened.
And what did you find? What was his true statement or testimony about?
Well, he didn't give a statement in court other than yelling out that he never did anything for money. His trial actually kind of imploded, and I think that's part of the reason that they came up with this pamphlet to try to cover up what happened at the trial. There was a gentleman named Levi Waller who was the Commonwealth's only witness against Nat Turner. And he had testified at previous trials, and every time he testified, the slaves hung, even if the slave owner came to court and said, no, my slave wasn't involved. If Levi Waller said they did it, they hung because he said he was an eyewitness. Well, at Nat Turner's trial, Levi Waller, I don't know whether it was Nat Turner being in the courtroom, Nat Turner looking at him, I don't know what it was, but at Nat Turner's trial, he confesses instead that he was at his still. Levi Waller was a known moonshiner. So there goes bloop, there goes your case because your primary witness has now perjured himself. Then one of the judges who was also a congressman just spontaneously began giving Nat Turner's confession and said Nat Turner told him all these things. And then Nat Turner yells out in the courtroom that he never did anything for money. So that's not a prosecutor's dream of how your trial should go.
There was a rebellion. At least 56 white men, women, and children were killed.
Yes.
That all happened. But then this pamphlet is created. What do you think is the purpose of that?
Well, I think the pamphlet served several different purposes. I think one was that it would be spread what had happened to Nat Turner and his confession to make him look like a madman so that other slaves wouldn't follow and try to do the same thing. I think that as the abolitionist movement was gaining steam, it sort of took the wind out of their sails to have Nat Turner not be a hero, but to be a madman. And I think that the other thing that it did was it protected the Commonwealth because as slaves were thought of as property, the Commonwealth has now been proven to be involved in destroying people's property based on the word of a perjurer. So each time a slave was hanged, or even if their sentence was commuted and they were sent south to be sold, those farmers got money. They might get $300 up to $600. But the Commonwealth is now embroiled in this perjury. And so I think it was also to cover themselves.
So it's this incredible moment, too, in history and in the history of slavery, because you said you were surprised to find a transcript. I'm always surprised that there was even a trial. But this was a time when Southerners liked to comfort themselves into believing that they had a legal institution, which was all going by the rule. And things changed after this rebellion.
Well, before the trials began, I think there are some Southerners who wanted to convince themselves that things ran a certain way. But there were many who didn't, including some of the judges in court, like Tresvant. Right after the uprising, they just went crazy. There were not only militia from Southampton County, but from all over Virginia, from North Carolina, who rushed into Southampton County. And they were killing people. All you had to do was have dark skin. Mm. And
I think more than 200 slaves died in the aftermath.
Yes,
were killed.
Yeah. Right. And so part of what stopped them was that the governor, who was informed and watching all this very closely, sent troops into Southampton County because this Congressman Tresvant had told them that, you know, there were so many slaves on the loose, they needed a lot of troops. And the general, General Epps, who came in, he was distressed, I guess that's putting it nicely, by all the murder and torture he saw around them. And so he threatened the militia and told them if they didn't stop, he would take up arms against them. So the trials that followed, I think it was part of that part of the law and order. But I think it was also because they knew that the abolitionists were watching and they wanted to present a picture of a more, a more rational kind of South.
Hmm. Well, you talked about the abolitionist movement. Novelist Harriet Beecher Stowe, who most famous for penning Uncle Tom's Cabin, is a character in your book. Why include her?
You know, it was really interesting. I, as part of my research, I was reading everything I could find about Nat Turner. And after she wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, she wrote a book called Dread, which she said was inspired by Nat Turner. And I thought, well, that's really quite a departure to go from a very kind of passive Uncle Tom to this warrior figure in Dread. And I thought, well, what might have made her do that? So that was a question ticking in my mind. Also, there was a slave actually involved in the revolt named Will. And the lore is that Will's body was never found. He was supposed to have been killed, but he was unaccounted for. Well, in my writer's mind, I thought, Will escaped. Well, I have these two things going on, and then I go to Vermont Studio Center for an artist residency, for a writer's residency. Got to go to the Harriet Beecher Stowe Center. Went there looking for information about Harriet Beecher Stowe and her writing Dread, and I actually came across a letter that she had written to the Duchess of Argyll, and she mentions Dread and that she's writing 20 pages a day. Well, as a writer, I'm like, wow, what's going on?
You're a writer with a word processor, and that sounds like a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though I still write longhand before I put it in, but she mentions meeting this slave named William in the same letter and how taken she is with this slave. And so I thought, well, is this William my Will? And perhaps her learning the story from him might have moved her toward this more radical writing. And so both he and Harriet Beecher Stowe are now in the book.
Can I get you to read for me?
Oh, I'd be thrilled to read. Let me put on my ugly reading glasses and no one can see them.
No
because
one can see a thing.
This is radio.
Those are lovely glasses.
Oh, thank you. That's not what my kids say. So. This scene is early in the book. It's Harriet Beecher Stowe. And she's reminiscing about when she first learned about Nat Turner. In the book, this is 25 years after the event, but she's reminiscing about 25 years earlier. Nat Turner was proof that Negro slaves were not content with their lot. Bondage was not natural for them, thereby refuting one of the most common arguments put forth to justify slavery. Nat Turner was a symbol of justice, a Negro freedom fighter who would not bow down to the ravages and chains of forced bondage. William Lloyd Garrison published an editorial about Nat Turner in The Liberator, thumbing his nose at the South, applauding Nat Turner, nudging the church, and prophesying that there was more violence to come if America did not mend her ways. Garrison and others demanded action. What kind of God, what kind of gospel, what kind of church can sit idly by while people are allowed to malinger and die simply because of the color of their skin. There had to be others like Nat Turner, and it was the duty of men of conscience to assist them. How could religion, white religion, be real if millions of souls were forbidden to hear the gospel simply because they were black? Where is America's William Wilberforce? Garrison had looked at the people sitting at Lyman Beecher's table. I cannot help but believe that if such a man does exist, he is in this room. He had stared at Harriet's father. Turner's uprising was electricity, inspiration in the air. Conversation about him rattled the dinner table and shook the Beecher debates. Maybe it was time to confront the South. Maybe it was time, in the name of the Lord, to take up arms. Then, almost as suddenly as his name was raised, the horrible truth came out in the form of Nat Turner's own confession. Nat Turner was a fiend with no remorse, a baby killer, a religious fanatic, a megalomaniac, and a common thief. Who could argue with Turner's own confession? The horrible news deflated everyone and confirmed her father's belief that churchmen ought not put their hands in the muck. Don't incite the slaves to insurrection. Preachers' hands should be filled with Bibles as their weapons, he said. He preached against it, but said let those involved in the slavery mess clean it up. It would all be resolved in time, her father Lyman said. Stick to saving souls. And Garrison needled him, asking, weren't black souls worth saving?
Sharon Yule Foster, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Reading from The Witnesses, it's now out. Sharon's going to be reading from her work and signing copies on September 8th at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham at 7 o'clock. Going to be at Barnes & Noble and New Hope Commons September 10th at 2. For more information, you can visit theresurrectionofnatturner.com. That's the state of things for today. Thank you for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.